Detective Inspector Grant began his account in succinct police fashion. Just before Easter, a girl called Elizabeth Kane, who lived with her guardians near Aylesbury, went to spend a short holiday with an aunt in Maneshill. She went by coach, because the London Loughborough coaches pass through Aylesbury and also Maneshill before reaching Loughborough. At the end of a week, her guardians, a Mr. and Mrs. Wynne, had a postcard saying she was enjoying herself very much and was staying on. They took this to mean for the duration of her school holiday, which would mean another 3 weeks. When she didn't turn up the day before she was supposed to go back to school, they took it for granted she was merely playing truant and wrote to her aunt to send her back. The aunt, instead of going to the nearest call box or telegraph office, broke it to the Wynnes in a letter that her niece had left a fortnight previously. The exchange of letters took the best part of a week, so that by the time the guardians went to the police, the girl had been missing for 3 weeks. And before the police could really get going, the girl turned up. She walked into her home near Aylesbury late one night wearing only a dress and shoes, and in a state of complete exhaustion. "How old is the girl?" Robert asked. 15, nearly 16. The police had to acquire her story second-hand from the Wynnes, as the girl was still recovering from her ordeal and grew hysterical at any mention of an investigation. Her story was that while she was waiting for her return coach in Maneshill, a car pulled up with two women in it. The younger woman, who was driving, asked if they could give her a lift. Was the girl alone? Didn't anyone go to see her off? No. Her uncle was working, and her aunt had gone to be godmother at a christening. The girl told the women she was waiting for the London coach, and they said it had already gone. She was distressed because it was beginning to rain and growing dark. The women suggested they give her a lift to where she could get a different coach in half an hour's time. She accepted and got in beside the elder woman in the back of the car. A picture swam into Robert's mind of old Mrs. Sharp, upright and intimidating, in her usual place in the back of the car. He glanced at Marion Sharp, but her face was calm. This was a story she had heard already. Grant continued. The girl paid little attention to where they were going, but it seemed to her they had been traveling for a long time. Eventually, she said something about it being kind of them to take her out of their way, and the younger woman said it wasn't out of their way, and that she would have time to come in and have a cup of something hot with them before they took her on to her stop. Eventually, the younger woman got out, opened what appeared to be drive gates, and the car was driven up to a house which it was too dark to see. She was taken into a large kitchen. A kitchen? Yes. The older woman put some coffee on the stove to heat, while the younger one cut sandwiches. While they ate, the younger woman told her that they had no maid at the moment and asked her if she would like to be a maid for them for a little. She said she wouldn't. They tried persuasion, but she stuck to it. Then their faces began to grow blurred, and when they suggested she might at least see what a nice bedroom she would have if she stayed, she was too fuddled to do anything but follow their suggestion. She remembers going up a first flight of stairs with a carpet, and a second flight with what she calls something hard underfoot. And that was all until she woke in daylight on a truckle bed in a bare little attic. She was wearing only her slip, and there was no sign of the rest of her clothes. The door was locked, and the small round window wouldn't open. "Round window," said Robert uncomfortably. It was Marion who answered him.
"Yes, a round window up in the roof."
Since a few minutes ago, Robert had seen the little round window in the roof. There seemed no adequate comment. "Presently," Grant said, "the younger woman arrived with a bowl of porridge. The girl refused it and demanded her clothes and her release. The woman said that she would eat it when she was hungry enough and went away. She was alone until evening, when the same woman brought her tea on a tray with cakes and tried to talk her into giving the maid's job a trial. The girl again refused, and for days this coaxing and bullying went on. Then the girl decided if she could break the small round window, she might be able to crawl out of it onto the roof and called the attention of some passerby. Unfortunately, her only implement was a chair, and she had managed only to crack the glass before the younger woman interrupted her. She snatched the chair and belabored the girl with it. Then she went away and came back with what the girl thinks was a dog whip and beat her until she fainted. Next day, the older woman appeared with an armful of bed linen and said that if she wouldn't work, she would at least sew. No sewing, no food. She was too stiff to sew, and so had no food. The following day, she mended some of the linen and was given stew for supper. This arrangement lasted for some time, but if her sewing was bad or insufficient, she was either beaten or deprived of food. Then one evening, the older woman brought the usual bowl of stew and went away, leaving the door unlocked. The girl waited, thinking it was a trap, but in the end, she ventured out onto the landing. She ran down a flight of uncarpeted stairs and down a second flight to the first landing. She could hear the two women talking in the kitchen. So she crept down the last flight, dashed for the door, and ran out, just as she was, into the night. "In her slip?" Robert asked. No. I forgot to say the slip had been exchanged for her dress. There was no heating in the attic, and in nothing but a slip she would probably have died. "If she ever was in an attic," Robert said. "If she ever was in an attic," the inspector agreed smoothly. "She walked a great distance in the dark," she says. "There was no traffic, and she met no one. Then, some time later, a lorry driver saw her in his headlight and gave her a lift. She was so tired, she fell asleep, until the lorry driver woke her and set her down at the roadside. He said this was where she'd wanted to be put off, and drove away. She was less than 2 miles from her home. She heard a clock strike 11, and shortly before midnight she arrived home." When Grant finished, there was a short silence. "And this is the girl who is sitting in the police car outside?" Robert asked.
"Yes," Grant said.
"I take it that you have reasons for bringing her here?"
"Yes. When the girl was finally induced to tell her story to the police, there were 2 statements that helped a lot. They were, firstly..." And Grant read from his notebook.
"When we had been going for some time, we passed a bus that had Milford on it. No, I don't know where Milford is. Secondly, from the window of the attic, I could see a high brick wall with a big iron gate in the middle. There was a road on the farther side because I could see telegraph posts. I couldn't see traffic because the wall was too high. You couldn't see through the gate because it had sheets of iron on it. Inside, the carriageway went straight for a little and then divided in two into a circle up to the door. It wasn't a garden, just grass." Grant shut his notebook. "As far as we know, there is no other house between Labra and Milford which fulfills the girl's description, except the franchise. The franchise, moreover, fulfills it in every particular."
"Do you wonder I needed help in a hurry?" Marion Sharp said to Robert. "Can you imagine a more nightmare piece of nonsense?"
He nodded. "The girl's story is certainly the oddest mixture of the factual and the absurd. I know that domestic help is scarce, but could anyone hope to enlist a servant by forcibly detaining her, to say nothing of beating and starving her?"
"No normal person, of course," Grant agreed. "But there is no end to the extravagance of human conduct."
"Yes, but the extravagance is just as likely to be in the girl's conduct. After all, the extravagance begins with her. She is the one who has been missing for
a month," Grant supplied. "Quite. While there is no suggestion that the household at the franchise has varied at all from its routine, would it not be possible for Miss Sharp to provide an alibi for the day in question?"
"No," Marion said. "The day, according to the inspector, is the 28th of March. That is a long time ago, and our days here vary very little, if at all. It would be quite impossible for us to remember what we were doing, and most unlikely anyone could remember for us."
"Your maid?"
"We have no maid. We find it difficult to keep one. The franchise is so isolated."
the moment threatened to become awkward. Robert hesitated.
This girl, I don't know her name.
Elizabeth Kane, Grant said. Known as Betty Kane.
Oh, yes, you did tell me, I'm sorry.
May we know something about her? Why guardians, not parents, for instance?
She's an orphan.
During the war, she was evacuated to the Aylesbury district and billeted with the Wynns, who had a boy 4 years older. When both parents were killed in an air raid, the Wynns, who had always wanted a daughter, were glad to keep her.
And her record?
Excellent. Has never been in any kind of trouble, in school or out of it. Transparently truthful was the phrase her form mistress used.
Was there any evidence of the beating she said she had been given?
Oh, yes. The Wynn's own doctor saw her. She had been extensively knocked about. I should like to say the Wynns are very sensible people. They have not tried to dramatize the affair. They have taken it admirably.
All that remains, Marion Sharp said, is for me to take it with the same admirable detachment.
But you see my position, Miss Sharp. The girl not only describes the house, she describes the inhabitants very accurately. A thin, elderly woman with white hair and a much younger one, thin and tall and dark.
At that moment, the door opened, and old Mrs. Sharp herself appeared. She looked more than ever like a Sibyl.
Ah, she said. Three strange men.
Mother, Marion said, this is Mr. Blair, of Blair, Hayward and Bennett. They have that lovely house in the High Street.
The old woman fixed Robert with her seagull's eye.
Needs retiling, she said.
It did, but it wasn't the greeting he'd expected.
Her greeting to Grant was even more unorthodox. Far from being impressed by Scotland Yard, she merely said,
you shouldn't be sitting in that chair. You are much too heavy for it.
Mother, Marion said, the inspector wants us to see a young girl. She was missing from her home for a month, and when she turned up, she said she had been detained by some people who wanted to make a servant of her. They kept her locked up and beat and starved her. She described the place and the people, and you and I fit the description admirably.
So does the franchise.
The suggestion is she was detained in our attic. The inspector would like us to meet the girl.
Have you any objections, Mrs. Sharp? Grant asked.
On the contrary, Inspector, the old woman said. I look forward to it with impatience. It is not every afternoon I go to my rest, a dull old woman, and rise a potential monster.